It's about that time. Good morning, everybody. I'm going to go ahead and get Chuck to start us off with a word of prayer. Right. Well, welcome everybody this quarter. Most of you are probably in here last quarter, but we'll be going over the second half of 1 Corinthians. So Chuck did an excellent job last quarter of covering kind of an introduction to Corinthians and then covering the first seven chapters. So we'll be going 8 through the end of the chapter. So you can kind of imagine it. You know, we've all, been or watched on TV, whatever it may be. You know, an Auburn football game where they're playing maybe La Tech or La Monroe. And so this is kind of the second half. The B team's in, backups coming in, but, they try to give everyone a good show still. So that's kind of what I'll try to do this quarter. If you can see, I'm not sure how well that shows up, but that's just kind of a little bit of an overview of the entire book of 1 Corinthians. So you can kind of look back there. Hardly see it, it's so small up there. That slide kind of stretched in particular of what you have covered and what we'll be covering this quarter. So we've got quite a few topics, even though 9 chapters, half of a book, sometimes you think, man, you got to stretch it. There's a lot of big things for us to cover. So obviously this morning we'll be going over food covered to idols. We'll be following that up with personal rites, idolatry, spiritual gifts, the head covering, the Lord's Supper, the body of Christ being his church, love, orderly worship, the resurrection, the collection of the saints, and just a few other items and tangents and things that kind of come up over the course of any study that you can't always predict or prepare for, but we'll do our best to do. So it's going to be a good study. We'll have a lot of meat. I think just 1 Corinthians in general is a book that you can go to that covers so many issues. This was a good church that had some questions and some concerns for Paul. And so he's writing to them, giving them meat and preparing them for issues that they had to face and issues that we still face today. So this morning we'll be going over chapter 8. We're going to try to get through the whole chapter. It's a short chapter. But there's a lot of things that it covers, and there's a lot of things that I think can really apply to us. So first off, we start off with kind of the key verse, which really sums up the chapter pretty well, and that's 1 Corinthians 8 and verse 1 I have up there. Now concerning food offered to idols, we know that all of us possess knowledge. This knowledge puffs up, but love builds up. Okay, so there's kind of, quite a bit in here, and some of this we'll kind of go over through the course of the chapter. But there's one thing that I think is helpful to point out from the beginning, because I think we all come into a chapter like this with our own perspective, right? Some of us may look at it, and there's kind of two sides of a coin being covered here, right? There are these brothers that have this knowledge, and they're kind of puffed up in their knowledge. And then there's these brothers that Paul refers to as the weaker brother. I don't necessarily think it means that these are weak Christians. It's just maybe the weaker position in this issue that we'll be covering. But they have knowledge as well. And so, I don't know, maybe we both read it, maybe at different times in our lives, or maybe depending on the issue that we are thinking of relating this to. Obviously, food sacrificed to idols might not be the issue we identify with, but the issue we think of, we may identify with a different brother in this chapter. And so whichever side of the coin that we kind of find ourselves on, we may be reading it from that perspective. And there may be something fresh on our minds right now. We all have things that kind of rise to the top as we walk through life. And so as we're thinking about that, I think we can see here where he says, all of us possess knowledge, right? It wasn't just the brother that kind of maybe had this better knowledge of what an idol was that was the one that had all the knowledge. And the weaker brother in this chapter had none. That was not the case here. And when Paul's addressing the church at Corinth here, he says all of us possess knowledge, okay? But there were kind of two things going on. There was one brother that was being puffed up, and then there was others that were being built up or that needed that love to build them up. And so I guess the question would be, what's the difference? You know, what's the difference between being puffed up and built up? Kind of made me think of that children's song, right? The wise man built his house upon the rock. Obviously, that relates to a parable taught by Jesus. But, you know, the rock, that love is building up. So when you're building up, you know, and we've all seen houses come up and those kind of things, right? You start with that solid foundation, right? That rock, and you build upon that. And when you're building on that, you're building on something that's there. And yet, when we think of something being puffed up, it's almost this idea of this balloon, right? It's kind of blowing itself up. When we think of a balloon being blown up or a hot air balloon, right? It's kind of being held down, you know, not by these strong supports. And if that's cut free, it kind of floats away. It disperses, right? There's no substance that it's built upon. And so when we're looking at these issues, you know, love is tied in with that foundation. This knowledge, you know, I don't think Paul is dismissing the knowledge, but we just kind of have to look at it through that lens. And so I think that's kind of a key verse as we're going through this chapter to keep in mind behind all these things. I don't know. I saw them in my Bible, but I assumed that most of the original stuff in the original Greek, and I didn't do a whole lot of detail on that, but I know punctuation was usually not present in the original translations. It was something that we've kind of added after the fact to meet our modern languages, usually. So I don't know. I'm not sure. It's a good question. Anybody else know? I kind of read through and I didn't see anyone highlight that in any of the commentaries and things I read. Good question. Okay, so the dangers of pride with knowledge. Okay, first, we'll go ahead and kind of read this first little section of the chapter. Now, concerning food offered to idols, we know that all of us possess knowledge. This knowledge puffs up, but love builds up. If anyone imagines that he knows something, he does not yet know as he ought to know. But if anyone loves God, he is known by God. Okay, so as we look at this idea of being puffed up, you know, we're kind of seeing this idea of this pride coming in, right? And pride is not the source of all problems. But when we look at strife within the church, when we look at strife within our homes, strife within our personal relationships, obviously, and at least in my life and in my experience, pride has played a big factor. My own pride, you know, it still does. You know, if I think of times where maybe I'm aggravated in the home, whether it be with Jana, or whether it be with my children, or whether it be with maybe friends or other people in the church, you know, a lot of times when I finally kind of let it boil down and simmer down, and if I can kind of be honest about it, you know, it's because I was hurt, I wanted, you know, and there's a lot of I's involved in that, and it kind of becomes this pride issue. And I think we see that here with these liberties that they had and with going. And so I'd like to take a look at a few verses. Proverbs 13:10. If someone would read that. I've got a few verses and I kind of pop up the verse. My slides are very basic in terms of my PowerPoint skills, or at least the time that I want to put into making a PowerPoint presentation. And so someone could read Proverbs 13:10. Okay, so, you know, going back to the Proverbs, there was so many. I mean, if you're wanting to look at pride and conflict and you read through the Proverbs, take your pick. I mean, there's so much said there about that. But we see this idea that through this pride, through this insolence, is going to come conflict. And that's what we see happening in this chapter. You know, you had this issue of meat sacrificed to idols, and you had, you know, people that were more concerned about their own rights, their own view, their own ideas on this issue than concern for their brother or sister. And you know, how it was affecting them and maybe what it was causing them to do, which might be causing them to sin in certain cases. And so when we see that, you can kind of relate that to so many issues within the church. It's not just meat sacrificed to idols. And I think, you know, I want us to kind of be thinking of that the whole way through this. You know, think of making this personal to you, making this personal to your experiences, you know, and things that kind of we cling on to. Because we all bring with us baggage through our own personal experiences, through our views, through our upbringing, through our attitudes. And pride is a big part of that, or at least it is for me oftentimes. And kind of humbling ourselves and letting go of things and not making it all about us is difficult because it's more than just an issue. It's more than just an action. It's kind of a mindset, right? Humbling ourselves and thinking of ourselves lower is not just an action. I can act humble. You know, I can act lowly and still be extremely prideful in my heart and in my mind. And, you know, that's hypocrisy. And we can do that. And so changing our heart, changing our minds is a difficult thing. And I think learning humility, at least for me, is a very difficult thing. So why is pride the source of so much conflict? Not just in this chapter, but in general, but in this chapter as well. Where does pride, strife, where do those kind of things play together? Yeah, go ahead. Wanting that control, wanting to be right, I mean, that's something that it makes it easier for all of us to have, for sure. Yeah, I mean, when you get puffed up, you're looking to your own interests. That pride is going to have you looking out for number one, or that pride may kind of cause you to kind of sink in and always think about how others are hurting you. Instead of looking to help others, instead of looking to be an encourager, a lot of times, you know, we're constantly, everything that happens, every time someone does, you know, sometimes it's hard for us to see some other people do something good because instead of looking at that and rejoicing with them, you know, we get upset because, hey, how come maybe I was left out. Maybe I felt left out. Maybe this and that. And I'm not diminishing those things completely. But we have to kind of keep those things in check. And a lot of times, pride can play into both sides of those issues. And I know at least it does for me oftentimes. 1 Corinthians 13, 4, and 5. We'll kind of take a sneak preview. But as we look through this, there's so many issues that Paul kind of weaves in and out of. 1 Corinthians 13, 4, and 5. And I'll read that. Or I'll highlight that at least. You know, Paul describing love here says love doesn't boast and isn't arrogant. Love does not insist on its own way. You know, and when we look at that, you know, as we kind of highlighted that in that key verse about love builds up, you know, about looking out and loving, you know, we kind of see what love isn't, what love does not do. It doesn't boast. It's not arrogant. And it doesn't seek its own way. And a lot of times in these issues, when we look at this issue that's being discussed here, and when we look at issues that cause problems, a lot of times it's because we're pretty strongly seeking our own way. You know, and this can go from small decisions to big ones. You know, and a lot of times in our own homes, those become things because, you know, maybe we're the most comfortable with our husbands, our wives, our family members. And so with them, hey, I can get what I want. You know, and maybe it's easy, you know, in at work or in these, you know, personal relationships that we have that are less frequent, that aren't kind of this constant stay in our lives, to say, okay, yeah, we can do that. But then, you know, we get home, you know, now I want to sit down. I want to do this. I want to watch this. I don't want to do that. And a lot of times we get into that, and a lot of times we do insist on our own way pretty strongly, you know, and kind of being selfless and thinking of others is tough, you know, and sometimes it's easy for a while, and then we just kind of get tired of it, and we can kind of have a little bit of that. I know, you know, that can be something that can be easy for me to fall into. You know, as a father, sometimes you just get enough and you want to be selfish, you know, and then we got to think of putting others first as a husband, as a father, as a friend, as a brother, as a sister. Those are all important things. And so we just kind of see, again, this linking together of pride with selfishness, with kind of a lack of love. All right, and if we look at Romans 12, 16, someone would read that.
Be of the same mind toward one another. Do not be haughty in mind, but associate with the lowly. Do not be wise in your own estimation.
Okay, so, and I think that the end of this verse really hits home what's going on here. Never be wise in your own sight. You know, so this idea of pride and of kind of this self-wisdom of thinking that we have it right. And one of the problems that we'll talk about here is they were right. You know, the brothers that would eat the food sacrificed to idols, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute, but they were right. And you know what? It didn't matter. They were right, and yet they were wrong. And so it almost makes it a little bit tricky. Okay, so if we look at these questions, we already kind of talked about question number one, this kind of difference between being puffed up, pride, you know, and does it matter what the specific issue is? And I think we've kind of identified. I think, again, it's kind of that when you're living in harmony, it's working together, you know, and so we think of harmony. What is a harmony? Well, it's two different notes. You know, a lot of times we associate a harmony with a musical melody, and a melody would be one note, and harmony would be when you're adding in that soprano and that alto, or maybe if you're thinking instrumental, different instruments, and so they're playing a different sound, and yet they all work together to make one kind of beautiful song. And so we have to live in harmony because we're different people. Right, we're all kind of playing similar, hopefully, and as we all kind of have the same goal in mind, we're walking similar paths, but different. We have different personalities, we have different interests, we have different things going on within our lives, we're at different stages of life, we've had different upbringings and different backgrounds, and yet we kind of need to harmonize those things and work together. And I think pride is one of those things. You know, don't be haughty, associate with the lowly, don't be wise in your own sight. Those are things I think that's going to throw you out of that harmony. If we're focusing on self, we're not going to live in harmony with others because we're going to constantly be pulling them to us instead of us working together.
Some wisdom there, and you can use that to build somebody up to build
right.
The foundation you're talking about. But just knowledge alone
right? If you didn't hear that, Chuck's talking about this knowledge that we have combined with love can be used to build up. And that's what this wisdom is taking knowledge and using it for good and using it in the proper context and not puffing up ourselves, but building up others. So food offered to idols. We'll read this in a second, but first, what is an idol? Okay, an inanimate object we could put our faith in that's not. Anything you put before God. I think that, you know, is probably a definition that we understand a little bit more. For the Corinthians, when they thought of an idol, I don't know that, you know, it's morphed in our modern speech. We use it in a different way. We have TV shows that maybe we watch, American Idol. And we don't say that in a bad way. Maybe we should. But, you know, wow, that person was second season American Idol. They're great. You know, it's just someone that they sang, but it's someone what that people want to be like. I want to be famous. Well, this person was nobody, and now they're famous. It's an American idol. As Americans, we kind of worship fame, right? Fortune and those kind of things. So when we look at that, you know, and I was kind of looking at how to apply this in a modern way, all of a sudden, you know, I'm kind of looking at that show and some of those slang terms that we use a lot of times in a positive way. Man, I really idolize her, or I idolize him. Have I used that terminology before in a positive way, talking about someone? Maybe so, and they probably did not use it that way. And speech and the root of words and all that, not necessarily bad. You know, I don't think we are literally worshiping these people. But, you know, when we think of what an idol was, are idols real? Were idols real? Paul says no. Okay, says an idol in and of itself is nothing. But at the same time, they were real things. You couldn't walk through Corinth and not see evidence of idolatry and idols. You know, it kind of makes me think, I try not to. So I try my best to eat reasonably healthy most of the time. But probably at least once a month on my way to work, there's a little donut shop right on the way, and I'll stop and pick up a couple dozen donuts for the office. Drop them in the break room, go around and tell everybody, and there's some selfishness in there. I want some donuts too. And I do this, and it's a family, they're immigrant family from somewhere in Asia, and they have one of those big, fat, Happy Buddha things right next to the cash register. We've probably all seen it if we've gone to Chinese takeout or different shops, right? And it's this big, fat dude, bunch of, like, beads, and he's kind of holding his hands up and smiling. Okay, I did a little research on it because I was kind of curious in light of this illustration what it meant. Evidently, this is not Buddha, but it's kind of a Buddhist-related thing, and it's some monk from a long time ago that taught about Buddha, and he's kind of a Santa Claus-like figure in the Buddhist faith and will bring good fortune. Supposed to bring happiness, it's supposed to bring prosperity upon your business. And it's good luck, evidently, if you rub his belly, which I've never done. But, you know, and we kind of laugh about that, but, you know, to these businesses and to the people that thought enough to pay, I don't know, hundreds of dollars probably for a pretty good-sized little fat Buddha idol to place in their business for everybody to see, it's something that, you know, I think they think of more than just kind of a good luck charm. I think they think a little bit more of that than, oh, I found a penny on heads. Pop that in my pocket. You know, we kind of do that, I don't know, habit or whatever, something you kind of grew up doing maybe. But we don't really think that it brings us any kind of real good fortune. No more than a rabbit's foot would. But to certain people, these things are real. And so there is forms of idolatry that still exist and are still real in the lives of billions of people around the world today. And so we live in kind of a very Judeo-Christian culture that's changing fast. But a lot of those things aren't ever present around us. We see kind of little insights into them. But in Corinth, it would have been something that was everywhere. It would have been something that was hard to get away from. Evidently, the Jews kind of had special permissions to get their meat from special sources because obviously they had very strict laws concerning the meat and their sources of meat and how it was slaughtered and what they could eat and if it was contaminated and kosher. And we still see that today. You can go and get Hebrew National kosher hot dogs and certain things, and get kosher foods. And some of us may eat that and just say, oh, well, it doesn't have a lot of fillers in it and it tastes better. And we're not really concerned about how it was killed or any of those things. But there are Jews that live in the United States today that are very concerned with those, and they still have those kind of things. But for the most part, in Corinth, most of the meat that was eaten had been sacrificed to an idol. That was, I guess, most of the meat that was slaughtered was kind of dedicated in that way, and it was hard to get around and not eat that. And so that was a real concern for the people living here. And so let's go ahead and read. I'll read verse 4 through 6. Therefore, as to the eating of food offered to idols, we know that an idol has no real existence, and that there is no God but one. For although there may be so-called gods in heaven or on earth, as indeed there are many gods and many lords, yet for us there is one God, the Father, from whom all things and for whom we exist, and one Lord, Jesus Christ, through whom are all things, and through whom we exist. So when we look at this, you kind of see that, like Ashley said, an idol is not real. It has no real existence. So someone that is offering this meat as a sacrifice to an idol is offering a sacrifice to nothing, right? And so this is not tainted or dedicated meat. It's kind of nothing. They did something in their own mind. But their own personal belief system to something that was not real didn't leave a defiling or a sanctifying effect on the meat itself. Nothing happened to the meat. But something real did happen in the minds of those worshipers. And so while these idols aren't real, they are real in the minds of the pagans, right? And some of these Christians were former pagans. And so some of these Christians, even though maybe they kind of understood this argument, right, that these Christians were making, it's not real, they're offering the sacrifice, and so it's not really doing anything, they still had a hard time getting around that. You know, some of these people had been pagans for 30, 40, 50, 60 years. They had been worshiping and eating this meat sacrificed to idols, and in doing so, partaking in the worship, in this dedication, in these feasts, and in a lot of times these very sinful acts associated with it. And so for them, it was harder to separate that. And so that was kind of the struggle here that was going on. Maybe they understood this logical argument that made sense, but it was still hard. And there is some relation there a little bit to some of the Jewish dietary customs that they would have had. But I think probably, for a lot of these people and a lot of these probably pagan converts, those might not have been arguments they understood as much. But they did understand, and they still probably, a lot of them had family members. They lived in these societies. They worked with people that would eat of this and eat of it in a worshipful way and eat of it in a joyful way. And so they had a hard time kind of getting away from that. If we look at, and we'll just look briefly, but you can look at Mark chapter 7, And I'll just read verse 18. The whole chapter, or the whole section, goes into it a little bit more. But we see similar things here, talking about kind of kosher foods that we mentioned. Mark 7, verse 18 said, "And he said to them, 'Then are you also without understanding? Do you not see that whatever goes into a person from the outside cannot defile him, since it enters not his heart, but his stomach, and is expelled?'" So again, this is kind of talking about unclean meats and what truly defiles a person. Obviously, this was still before the church had been established. So the Jews still would have been held to those dietary laws, but we're being taught there about what truly defiles a person. I think when we look back and we look at now, that's kind of in a context of what's talking about here. What defiles us is not what we eat. What defiles us is what's kind of within our heart and kind of what's going to flow forth from that. If we look at 1 Corinthians 10, again, a little bit of a preview here of things to come, verses 18 through 20. "Consider the people of Israel. Are not those who eat the sacrifices participants in the altar? What do I imply then, that the food offered to idols is anything, or that an idol is anything? No. I imply that what pagan sacrifice they offer to demons and not to God. I do not want you to be participants with demons." Okay, so here we've got kind of 3 points, if not more. Idols are not real. They are real in the minds of the idolaters. Care should be taken that we do not partake with idols and demons. So we're kind of getting into this uncomfortable gray area. You know, this uncomfortable area that we see, and we can even look at Acts 15:29, and it'll kind of complicate matters maybe a little bit more. Acts 15:29, or starting in verse 28, and this is kind of the council writing to the converts, the Gentile converts, "For it seemed good to the Holy Spirit and to us to lay on you no greater burden than these requirements, that you abstain from what has been sacrificed to idols, and from blood, and from what has been strangled, and from sexual immorality. If you keep yourselves from these, you will do well. Farewell." Okay, so there we kind of see this somewhat clear instruction to those Gentile converts. They needed to abstain from food that was sacrificed to idols. And yet we clearly see Paul ultimately saying it's not a big deal. The idols aren't real. The food sacrificed to them, what goes in is not going to defile. So we have to look at all these, and we kind of have to really study it, because it's easier for us if we could just go back and it say, "Thou shalt not eat food sacrificed to idols," or "Thou shalt not make a big deal if thy brother eats food sacrificed to idols, because idols aren't real." So, I mean, there's, you know, we're looking at the people that maybe own the businesses and stuff. A little bit there. I think there's probably a little more of a direct worship and kind of demonic thing going on here, Jay.
Right.
And I think what we kind of see in these areas where, if we're looking at this specific issue and not kind of the general issue of love and concern for your brother, is there were multiple things going on. So there was these idea that there were these meat markets, kind of like we would go to the grocery store today, where you would just buy meat, maybe take home and cook, or maybe they kind of had, you know, like some of the grocery stores do today, that you can go in, you can buy some pre-cooked food and take it home and eat it. There were those kind of things going on, and this meat had been sacrificed to idols. It was also the idea that you could kind of go into these temples, and maybe some of them had kind of an eating area outside, and you could just buy food and eat it at the temple. There was also this idea that a lot of the times when people would eat this food sacrificed to idol, they would be involved in the sacrifice. There was a worship aspect that was going on. And so, you know, when we look deep into this and we look at why is this clearly condemned in certain cases, and then in other cases, Paul's saying it really is nothing, it doesn't matter, I think we kind of see those distinctions there. But the bigger issue is not meat sacrificed to idol. To my knowledge, I have never eaten meat sacrificed to an idol. And to my knowledge, I've never really seen it offered. I've never been somewhere and they said, well, we've got a cheeseburger, we've got a chicken sandwich, and we've got lamb chops that were sacrificed to Baal. Your choice. These are really juicy lamb chops. Never been on the menu anywhere that I have eaten. But it was something that they dealt with. But there have been times when there's been opportunities or things that I could participate in that maybe would have been okay, that wouldn't have bothered my conscience, that I have abstained from because it would have bothered the conscience of someone else, right? And maybe Jay's example. Maybe, you know, I could eat this donut. I could go and pick up donuts, but I've got a coworker over here that's a severe diabetic, and it's a big stumbling block for them to have that. They don't have the self-control to stop. So if I put it there, they're going to eat one or two, and they're going to make themselves sick, possibly do damage to themselves. So maybe I'll just pass up on getting those, or I'll pick up a healthier choice or make sure to get them something. A lot of times we live in a day and age where, you know, some of these dietary requirements for different people and things kind of do come into play a little bit. And maybe we have had a little more consideration for others based on that. So consider the weaker brother. Matthew chapter 18, verse 5 through 7. Matthew chapter 18, verses 5 through 7. Whoever receives one such child in my name receives me, but whoever causes one of these little ones who believes in me to sin, it would be better for him to have a great millstone fastened around his neck and to be drowned in the depths of the sea. Okay, so we kind of see this idea of being a stumbling block for our brothers, and that's really what's going on here. The meat sacrificed an idol was the specific issue going on in Corinth. That's not a specific issue that we deal with right now. But this idea of being a stumbling block to our brothers or our sisters is something that we do. This idea of maybe having the right to do something and yet it's still being wrong is something that we do deal with. And it's something that we do still have to face. And this idea of our pride and our rights. We live in a day and age where we have more rights than most people in the history of the world. And we know our rights, and we can demand our rights. And it's probably similar to Paul being a Roman citizen. He had a lot of rights as a Roman citizen, yet he rarely pulled that card out. But we see him on a couple of occasions do so, even though oftentimes he took beatings, and he took many things that he didn't have to without using that. Let me read through the rest of the chapter. Second bell, okay. We will finish up next week. Appreciate your time.